Section number 28660, Captain Robert Bonner, Reel 4. Now, we'll talk about your time at Sandhurst, you mentioned the officer, the servants, yeah, the cadet servants.
These are called college servants.
Now, what was the role of the college servant? What exactly did they do for you?
They were like uncles, I suppose, apart from the fact that they cleaned our rooms and polished our boots and other sort of work like that to allow us to get on with our studies. They were great advisors, and one could go to them, and they would, having had many years of experience in the army, they would be able to put many a young officer get on the right correct path. So they really were superb, and they became very attached to their cadets, and equally their cadets became very attached to them.
Now, how did you get amongst yourselves, amongst the cadets? I mean, presumably you still had some of your friends with you from the previous thing, but how did you get on? Did you have any special pals there or friends?
Yes, I think, well, the platoon was really the sort of the unit of our lives, and most of our friends were found from amongst that platoon or that particular, in our case, from Inkerman Company. Because of the size of Sandhurst, you really didn't have a great deal of opportunity of mixing with cadets from the other colleges. So your friends really came out of those that you lived and worked with.
Do you remember any of your particular pals then, if you remember their names or...?
Yes, indeed. Well, one particular pal was a man called Mike Hardy, who eventually became Brigadier in the Duke of Wellington's regiment. Great sportsman, wonderful rugby player, and who died all too suddenly. And then there was Michael Thomas, one of our old Etonian, who was scheduled for the Royal Horse Guards, and who knew everybody and everything. I met him years later at a reunion, and I told him I was no longer in the army, and he wouldn't believe me. He said, "Ah, I know you're up to something. You must be an MI5 or MI6. no such luck. And then there was Peter Sibbald, again, mentioned who. We three had all been together from the day we joined the army, fun enough. So there we all finished up in the same platoon at Sandhurst, and Peter became a major general. And there was several others. But after commissioning, I think certainly all our paths went in different ways, and very rarely did our paths cross elsewhere in the world.
Now, what about the system of assessment? Who was responsible for assessing? Because, as I understand it, it's normally fairly continuous.
It is, it's continuous.
How were you assessed? Who was doing it?
Platoon and company commanders, the permanent staff officers, continual assessment.
Which is a fair process. I mean,
it's a very fair, legitimate process, and it keeps everybody on their toes, without doubt.
Would they let you know when you were doing something wrong? Because you can't put something right, I presume, unless you know you're doing it wrong. I mean, would they warn you if you were going a bit off rails?
Yes, most certainly, and I think most people, if they felt themselves, they would know themselves whether they were going to go off rail or perhaps not pulling their weight in certain respects. And that would, there was the right opportunity then to go to the company commander and say, "Look, have I done the right thing?" And they would be very open and reasonable and helpful. And in the same way, there was always that great fallback in the British Army is the company sergeant major, and we all had a brigade of guards, company sergeant major in each company, and they were all true bastions of support in every respect, although they would chase us around mercilessly on the parade ground. So the system worked very well.
Were there sort of terminal reports?
There were terminal reports at every term, yes. And then finally, after your final examinations, the dreaded numbering of where you passed out.
Now, tell me about this, because there's the sword, is it?
Sword of Honour.
Sword of Honour, and there are other awards as well, which I can't remember. What about the Order of Patinet? I mean, how did you do? What were you expecting to do? Something you worried about?
No. Well, I think we all worried in our final 3 months about we knew how important it was that we got good examination results. Otherwise, we would either be sent back a term or told, you know, buzz off, you're no longer required. So the last 3 to 4 months were pretty hairy, really. Everyone working very hard and trying to catch up for too many nights out in London or too many liaisons with the ladies of the area. So we did work extremely hard. It was an awful and inevitably in any education establishment like that, there's a lot of catching up to be done in the final months. So then the final examinations and then the they are posted, and the commandant and his staff then select the person who's going to get the Sword of Honour, and there was a gold medal awarded for educational achievements. And
how did you do? Do you think?
I know exactly how I did. Indeed, I was commissioned.
You weren't in danger of getting the Sword of Honour.
I was not in danger. No.
I should have asked, before we just go on, later on, they had overseas exercises. I presume not.
No.
This would be on financial grounds, but that didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen, so.
And the other thing is, what about the sort of social life? I mean,
we had a great social life.
Well, just give us an idea of what the social life was like.
Those of us who had Scottish affiliations, backgrounds and associations, we used to go quite regularly to one of the one of the colleges of the London colleges. Oh Lord, which one was it? But anyway, one of the big London ladies colleges, where we used to go on a Friday night and have Scottish dancing. That went on very satisfactorily as far as my term was concerned, until on one particular occasion some enthusiastic cadets turned on the mains water hoses and caused a bit of trouble. So it was put out of bounds to us for the rest of that term, but I'm sure that that still carries on. Those of us, of course, who didn't have not had any opportunities, we hadn't, for many of us, ballroom dancing wasn't an attribute, but one of the ladies' schools in Camberley, who used to kindly invite us to go and have lessons with their young ladies, which was quite fun. And
what about drinking? Was there much drinking? I presume that would be very closely monitored, informally.
Yeah, drinking as such didn't play an important part in our lives. Eating did. And although we were very well fed, and there was very good our own facilities, but in Camberley there was one particularly good little restaurant. It was really out of bounds to everybody except cadets from Sandhurst and their girlfriends. And this was the Yorktown end of the town, and if we had enough money, we would go along there. And in those days of great shortage of meat, we would have the most wonderful steaks and chips and tomatoes and things like that. And that was really a highlight.
Now, What about the passing out parade? Now, there is a passing out parade. Well, perhaps it's only developed into a huge ceremony now, and I think it was pretty
important. It was, indeed, yes.
Can you tell me what you remember of your passing out parade? And also, in fact, of the lead up to it, because that's almost as big as the actual thing.
Yes, well, it's it is a great occasion. And apart from probably the trooping of the colour on horse guards by the brigade, it's probably the most important military occasion there is, the passing out parade at Sandhurst. Much preparation goes into it. Individual companies being parading on their own, then you parade as colleges, and then the whole academy parades together. And the parade is taken by the adjutant on his charger. And in those days, of course, the academy had its own military band, so there was never any question of not having music to march to. And so, again, although there were always parades, and there were always many opportunities for a ceremonial parade. King George V came and presented new colours to the academy. There were inspections by various overseas dignitaries. So the spit and polish of a ceremonial parade was constantly there. And we were very good at it. And we felt we knew we were. And then came the time of the passing out parade when, of course, all the families are invited. We had there was the dress rehearsal the day before. The 2 days before, during the night, we had a dummy passing out parade. Each company dressed up in various clothes. We, an Inkerman company, dressed up as Arabs on bicycles, because we all had bicycles, bog wheels as they were called. And so we paraded as a company of mounted Arabs, other companies dressed up in Roman uniform and other sort of things. And then another cadet took over, borrowed the uniform of the regimental sergeant major, dressed up as RSM Brandt, and others as a commandant and the rest of it. So we had a wonderful dummy passing out parade. And then the passing out parade itself, which was tremendous, finishing up with all of us marching up the steps of the grand entrance, followed by the adjutant on his horse, a moment never to be forgotten. And giving great happiness to all our families sitting on the enclosure outside. And then being saluted by our company sergeant majors for the first time. And then that night, the passing out ball, which was a great occasion.
What was that like?
That was superb, a memorable occasion. Large marquees on the wonderful lawns of Sandhurst. We had that magnificent South American band, don't know whose name escapes me, who was the thrill of London in those days, and other bands, and so we danced and ate and drank ourselves through till the early morning, when we then packed up and went home.
At what point you actually commissioned that, the passing out parade?
Yeah, as you march up through the portals of the grand entrance, that is it. And the parade, of course, our parade was taken by King George V, with Queen Elizabeth and the two princesses there.
Now, when was this? This would be 18 months. Was this July?
That's July 1948.
Now, when did you have to make the choices to which regiment you'd be commissioned? Well, sorry.
An ongoing situation throughout the whole time that we were there.
Now, tell me about the choice that you made and how it worked out.
Well, so I went there dressed as a private soldier in the Black Watch, but very quickly realised that there was no way that I was going to be able to afford the life of an officer in the Black Watch in peacetime.
Now, why not? Can you just talk a bit about that? Because people say that, but was the Black Watch a known expensive regiment?
Yes, I mean, the most expensive regiments are the Household Cavalry and the Brigade of Guards. Thoroughly impractical for anyone in my situation or in a similar situation to even consider going into them in peacetime, because of that.
Even though you had a sort of solid middle class background, it was not within range.
No.
What sort of a private income would you have needed on top of your salary, would you say?
A considerable one, because the uniforms and the way of life, the style in which they lived in London and elsewhere. So that question. And then
was
there
that
are
a frustration to you?
No, not a frustration at all. No, an accepted fact of life. Because those people who joined those regiments were good friends, and would remain so. But the fact that their way of life in their particular regiment would require additional income apart from that given to them by the government. And similarly, certain regiments, particularly in the Highland Brigade, they also had rather higher social standards. So again, one didn't object to this at all, but one accepted it as fact. So
how did you go about choosing a regiment to be commissioned?
Well, there is always great, and continues to this day, a great competition by regiments to get the cadets of their choice. So the colonels of the various regiments and corps, not only do they have their own internal advisory network on the staff at the academy, but they visit from time to time, and they meet the people that their representative has chosen as being a likely suitable person to join their regiment or corps. So my company commander in Inkerman Company was a major in the South Lancashire Regiment, and he had a visit from the General Moorhead, who was the colonel of the Manchester Regiment, who had come to see various people, including my friend who had nicked Montgomery's hat, and I had an interview. But so my company commander thought that it would be, because I hadn't made a decision, he thought it would be appropriate for me to have a word with this extremely delightful Major General, which I did, and he liked the look of me, and cut a long story short, I was put down as a possibility for the Manchester Regiment.
And couldn't be further away from Perth.
Couldn't be further away from Perth, no. But that didn't really matter at all. And so...
Did you look into the background of the Manchester Regiment?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Before you joined?
Yes. Well, we're having all these... studies on military history, so the battles of the Crimea, in which the regiment had participated with glory, were well known to me. So it was really very much it's in the hands. It's not up to the cadet to decide. It's up to the colonel of the regiment to decide who he's going to accept. So if you have a situation where the colonel decides he likes the look of you, then you would be a fool, unless you have other opportunities, to not to take advantage of that.
You didn't apply for anyone. I think, don't you have three?
You have to
choices?
Have three choices, yes.
Did you have two other fallback positions?
I have two others. I can't remember what they were at all. It went out of my mind altogether.
So you were going to go to the man. What about your uniform? Was that bought while you were at Sandhurst, or was that bought afterwards?
That is
because you get an allowance, don't you?
Yes, but that's bought immediately after Sandhurst, because each regiment, particularly in those days, had its own regimental tailor, regimental hatter, so you had to buy the style of uniform as worn by your particular regiment.
And what could you we might as well deal with that as we are on it. So, what was your regimental tailor?
We had a splendid family firm called Conway Williams, with offices in Brook Street in Mayfair, and the regiment hatter was Herbert Johnson of Bond Street, and their system was magnificent. There were two brothers, Mr. Conway and Mr. Williams, and one looked after the Brook Street premises, and the other one travelled the world looking after his regiments. And so we would go up to Brook Street and be measured before everything, and be most beautifully looked after by these distinguished tailors, and measured for everything under the sun.
Now, what was an officer's kit? I mean,
well, in those days,
what did the Manchester Regiment? insist.
In those days, it was very simple because we were in the midst of clothing coupons and things like that. So it's a rather different situation from present day. So we had to have a khaki greatcoat. We had to have service dress, Barathea service dress.
Is that the blue one?
The khaki uniform. Blues had only just been reintroduced after the war, so we had to have those as well. Number one dress, I think it was called. So it was very, very simple, really. The greatcoat, this khaki service dress, and the blues for evening wear, really. Mesket.
At all.
Not at that time. That didn't come in for another 3 years.
And did your did the allowance? I can't remember what it was at that time, but did it cover it?
It wasn't very much. I suppose it was something probably about, I don't know, £60-70, but I don't think it was much more than that. But
roughly speaking,
it covered it. Yes.
Now, were you encouraged to buy other some regiment potatoes? Take the opportunity to sell them everything under the sun for foreign service. You know.
I know exactly what you mean. No,
did they?
No, that didn't apply. Because there were no battalions of the Manchesters on foreign service at that time. They were in the UK, so it would have been rather ridiculous if they had tried to. But they were very good, and I remember the firm of Conway Williams with great affection. No longer in existence, sadly. But they were very good regimental tailors and looked after us all very well.
Now, a last point I should have asked before is, why infantry? I mean, there are other opportunities. I mean, the Royal Engineers, possibly, but the Royal Artillery as well was a huge organisation at the time.
Very simple answer. I liked being on my own two feet.
So that you weren't interested in any sort of cavalry or anything?
No.
Now, what was your first posting then? You passed out. I presume you have a period of leave.
May have quite a long leave, yes.
So when did you have to report?
Mike Holloway and myself, who were both out of intake, one both into the Manchester Regiment, we reported to the then headquarters of the regiment, which was in a place called Dunham Park in Altrincham, which was a temporary camp.
This is not a sort of old barracks.
This is a
camp. It was a depot, the regimental depot.
It's a wooden hutted camp which had been a prisoner of war camp during the war, and had been taken over at the end of the war by the infantry as a training unit, and then with the amalgamations and messing around that took place in 1946, a new battalion was being created at Dunham Park. And we lived only for a couple of weeks there.
Now, when did you join them there? Would that be September or October?
We were September, yes. And from there, we went to...
Now, what happened, when you first joined them? Again, just like joining the army, in a sense, your first impressions...
We were only there for a few days.
Okay.
Just to meet the depot staff. And here's my wife.
So, what happened when you first joined them? You were just there a couple of days.
We were just there for a couple of days, really, because... We were the very first. They wanted to see us because we were the first post-war regular army officers. We were an object of curiosity as far as they were concerned. And
how did they receive you? I mean, were they polite?
They were very cordial and pleasant, and made us most welcome.
In the mess.
But it was a very... It was then
at this stage, you wouldn't be given a platoon or anything.
No.
Depot anyway, so...
We were there just for 2 days to get involved a little bit in the history, be given to buy a copy of the regimental history, and then go home for a few more days, and then we were posted to Rhine Army to Wuppertal.
No, I thought you said the battalions weren't on there.
No.
Had they just gone out there?
Ah, sorry, yes, well, indeed. It was now that the battalion had just gone from Wuppertal, gone from Altrincham to Wuppertal.
Now, which battalion? This is the first battalion?
Yeah.
Now, was there another? I presume not. But
no, the first and the second had amalgamated in Dunham Park in Altrincham, left a training battalion, a training wing behind, and the first battalion had gone off to Germany.
What happened when you got out there? I mean, what was, you know, your journey out there? I presume you journeyed out with Holloway.
That's right. We journeyed out together to the Hook of Holland, and then by train from the Hook of Holland to Wuppertal.
Was this your first time abroad?
It was indeed. Yes. Yes. No way couldn't go abroad during the war.
This would be what? September.
This is September. Yes.
And what did you think of the 1st Battalion when you met them? I mean, they were going to be your life for a considerable period of time. What was your first impression of them as a unit?
They weren't as smart as I would have been accustomed to. Having been accustomed...
Now, in what way? In what way were they lacking?
Having for the previous 2 years been under the influence of sergeant majors and regimental sergeant majors of the Brigade of Guards... We were accustomed to a very high standard of appearance and drill. And when you get to a battalion of 600, 700 Mancunians, many of whom have just been serving in the war, although they were well turned out, they weren't sort of the highest piece of perfection that we had been accustomed to.
Presumably many of them would have been national servicemen as well. So not long-term regulars.
National service as such hadn't really started. The people were there for the emergency.
You're quite right, sir. I'm jumping ahead. Mm. Now, what about the officers' mess? What was your reception there? Who were the first people? I presume you'd meet the colonel and the adjutant first.
It was a bachelor mess at that time.
What do you mean by that? Cause that's
well, the commanding officer was a bachelor anyway, who had a distinguished officer of the regiment, and all the other officers, whether they were married or not, they all at that stage lived in the mess. So it was a very sort of male-orientated mess in this fine German barracks.
Never named the barracks, was it just Wuppertal Barracks?
It was just, I just remember that one as Wuppertal Barracks. Mm.
Were they friendly? I mean, was it the sort of mess where it was, once you were in, it was almost a democracy and you could speak to majors? Or was it the sort of mess where a subaltern did not speak to a major?
In those days, a subaltern didn't speak to majors particularly. It was still very much on the pre-war basis, everybody kept in their own little groups, really, sort of the majors to themselves, the captains to themselves, and then the lieutenants and the second lieutenants were all massed together, and we had quite a number of national service officers or temporary officers who really were only too keen to sort of finish their days in the army and get back to civilian life.
Now, were they friendly?
They were extremely friendly, yeah, without doubt, yes. But there were still one or two rather crusty senior majors who really, I think, were just playing a role rather than them intending to be crusty, but that was the impression they gave.
Were you put in a company and a platoon and given a platoon?
Immediately, anyway? Yes.
Now, what was your company?
I was initially put into C Company, given number 9 platoon.
And how did you set about getting to know your platoon? I mean, was it considered very important to get to know the men properly?
Oh, very much so. And we spent a great deal of our time training outside. Training actually on manoeuvres outside so we would go away and march to some training location and carry out exercises and shooting and things like that and spend the night in some commandeered German barn and then sort of back to barracks. So one got to know soldiers very quickly.